Welcoming back to the show, a woman who starred for 11 seasons as Margaret Houlihan in one of the most acclaimed television shows of all time. MASH went on the air 50 years ago next month, and we're celebrating by talking to a number of cast members and people involved in the show, and we're so happy to welcome Loretta Swit back to downtown. I was checking. It's been just about 3 years since you were on with us. I know.
Did you, what did I, something I said, what? Something I said, something I didn't say, what?
No, you're just a very busy woman with a lot going on, and I want to talk about some of that right away. You've got a brand new perfume available. Can you tell us about that?
Sure, yes. It's on my website, so I'd love to direct you and your listeners, my audience, my fans. It's on the website, yes, and I'm trying to remember now. My charity is a 501c3 donation, all tax deductible. So if you're buying the perfume, you're really making a donation to get the perfume. All the proceeds go into Sweetheart Animal Alliance. And I think the perfume is $60. It's and we call it a $60 donation in order to get the perfume.
Absolutely.
Just so that's clear, because it's all tax deductible. I'd like everybody to get something. And it's, I have to brag a little bit. It's a wonderful perfume. It's lovely, and it's been very successful so far. Everybody loves the scent. It's clean and powdery and fresh, and it's not floral. It's kind of, as it's been described, more as exotic in categories. The perfumes go in categories. You know, there's woodsy and floral and exotic and so forth. So it fell into kind of that category. But it's wonderful. It's light and fresh. It's a roll-on, which is what everyone loves these days. And my little secret is I keep my roll-on in the fridge. It's a little heart bottle, very charming. The name of the perfume is Sweetheart, of course. And when we've gone through this hot, steamy, terrible time, I take my little heart bottle and I open it and slide that perfume, and it's cold and it's refreshing and wonderful. So that's my little tip to my fans. If when they buy the perfume, that's what they should do. Put it in the fridge and conquer this terrible weather.
What a wonderful idea. And by the way, how could any perfume of yours not be exotic?
Well, that stumped me. I have no answer for that, I'm afraid. Thank you. That's very sweet.
Also, when you go to the website at www.sweetheart.org, you can get information about the second printing of your wonderful book, Sweetheart.
How exciting is that?
That is fantastic. Beautiful watercolor work. And for people who don't know, this is not a new thing. You've been an artist since you were, what, 6 or 7 years old?
6. And the reason I know it was 6 is because I won an art prize.
Well,
I wouldn't it be wonderful if after all these years my mom had kept it, or the little drawing I won. But the thing is, it still is. This is just a pleasure. I never thought of it as I'm going to do a book. I'm going to exhibit my painting. It was fun and delicious and just a wonderful way to express, and now, of course, because the paintings are animals, to express my love. And it's another way to fund my foundation. It's another way to fund my charity, because I sell my paintings. I sell prints of my paintings, which is also, if you get on the website and you're having conversations with me, it's another way to get a piece of us, you know. And the prints are not expensive, and they're beautifully done. It's a French process called giclée, and they look like originals. And when they're framed, they do look like originals. They don't look like paper print. Anyway, so the wonderful thing about my second printing is because my dear friend hyphen brother Mike Farrell wrote the introduction and the dedication. So I try not to blush when I'm reading what he wrote, and I'll try to live up to all the things that he wrote. But, you know, there you have it, my exotic self, you know. But there's that. And also, there was room on the back for Jamie's comment also to about the book. And my family, what can I say? My delicious MASH family.
We talked to Jamie just a few weeks ago, and we'll be talking with Mike again in a couple of days. So we're very excited about that. Also, I wanted to mention, too, we were very excited to see late last year, you got together with another friend of our show, Donnie Most, to do a play.
Oh, my dear Donnie. Oh, we did a play together. What a delight. It was wonderful. What can I say? It was just totally wonderful. And my dear Donnie was my husband in the play. It's a charming, lovely play about friendship over decades. And I think that's so valuable as a theme of a play or a story, because in our society now, I feel that's our saving grace, reaching out and helping each other, you know, to get through crises, whether it's 26,000 planes that are canceled, the flights are canceled, or fighting an epidemic, or wearing masks, or following the rules, or whatever. I mean, we should be out there helping each other, and in a way, that's what this play does. It talks about how these four people supported each other and helped each other through decades of friendship, and so I loved it, and I loved our cast. I mean, you can't get better than our cast. My dear Dee Dee Khan and Adrian, and you know, so it was a real treasure.
You've also been on the road a lot, doing events, many of them with Jamie and your Jeff Igor, Jeff Maxwell.
Jeff Igor. Yes, Jeff Igor. That stuck. I said it fittingly a couple of times, and now everybody calls him Jeff Igor. But he is an unrecognized comic. He is so fun, and he is a delightful, bright human being. And Jamie and I love doing the shows with him. And he's very loved and popular for his role on MASH. And it's great fun. I love the contact that it gives me. Jamie feels the same way, and Jeff. To reach out and talk to fans, to because MASH has become such a global family. It's just so rewarding to meet these people who love and adore you. I mean, what's a better way to live? God, people coming at you saying, I love you so much, or you've done so much for me. Or in my case, I get mail from women who became nurses because of Margaret Houlihan. I can't tell you the pride that I have in that. I mean, I swell up to bursting. It's just so amazing what that show contained and what it inspired, and it continues to inspire. And you're calling all of us, as you know, in our 50th year celebration. We have been on the air for 50 years. Yeah, I mean, when I say it, I kind of like swoon a little bit. 50 years.
It's remarkable. We're talking with the exotic Loretta Swit here on Downtown. What drew you first to the role of Margaret?
Oh, it doesn't work that way. That's so sweet. I was not drawn to her. Yeah, I'll tell you, it's maybe the second or third stage, but people seek you out. I mean, the casting people or the producers, writers, whatever, they think of you and draw you in, and then the second stage, as I say, might be that you say, oh, yes, this is my part. I want to do this. I remember being offered Shirley Valentine, and when I finished reading it, I called my agent and said, not only do I want to do it, I must do it. I must do this role. I love this role. You know, it's that kind of reaction you have, which can happen, you know, where you have this immediate link to that character. And with Margaret, I have to say, it took a while to get her honed down to what I felt I wanted to say with that character. And fortunately, I was blessed with writers who paid attention to me. You know, they didn't, don't listen to the girl. She's only a female or whatever. So eventually it got to, I felt, where I wanted to be with the character. And I think I'm rewarded by the mail that says I'm a nurse, because of you. I wanted her to be my thing, my mantra when I took the role was, I intend to be the best damn head nurse in Korea. That's my goal. And, you know, in fact, in order to do that, I had to work very hard on getting away from the silly kind of comedic empty thing that we had with Frank Burns. You know, both Larry and Liv and I, we were being treated as comic relief for the first couple of seasons, and it wasn't working for us because they were writing my character smarter, wiser, and she was, of course, very good at her job. He was being touted as inept, as a doctor, as a surgeon, and there's no compatibility there for Margaret, who admired Hawkeye and Trapper in the beginning, and then BJ, for their skills. How can she hook up with a guy who, number one, is married, there's no future there, and he's a joke in camp, he's a ninny, and he's a worthless doctor. So what is holding her there? You know, he's not tall, dark, and handsome with shoulders. He doesn't outrank her. I mean, there's no... So finally, we were able to sit down and say, we've got to fix this. And so in answer, a long-winded answer to your question, it was not an immediate affiliation or affection that I had for the character. I thought she needed a lot of work, and I would, Gelbart and I would look at each other and say, I wouldn't say anything and he'd say, we're getting there. We're going to get there. Don't worry. We're going to get there. We'll fix it. We're going to, you know, I loved him. Oh God, I loved him.
I also remember, last time we talked, you mentioned the fact that it was important to you that people understood that the nurses who were there in Korea, they were volunteers, which made it more impressive.
Right. Exactamundo, yes, absolutely. Those women were heroes beyond, you know, I'm not saying everybody who was drafted wasn't a hero. Anybody, a veteran. And my explanation, which I always quote, a veteran is someone who at one time or other in their life has written a blank check made out to the United States of America for the sum of up to and including their lives. Mm. You have given your life. You have said, I'm willing to die for my country. And this is a hero. This is a veteran, and that's the honor. And so you have these women volunteering to be in a place on the planet that is hotter than anywhere else in the summer and colder than anywhere else in the winter. And you have a written record that the cause of death during the Korean conflict was, number one, frostbite, number two, snake bite, number three, the war. Mm. Now, that tells you what kind of conditions they were working in. The difficulty of standing in blood for 18 hours trying to patch young bodies together. There was one totally destructive, painful line that we had. We are sewing bodies together that are young, that are old enough to shave. We're trying to patch bodies together of kids just old enough to shave, and it was psychologically. Can you imagine what it did for the doctors and nurses? And here, these women volunteered to do that, to be there, to do it. And they worked the same long hours. They said, you know, and it was a privilege to play all of us, to play those people. What heroes, geez, you know, what valor. Anyway, so I was very proud of the people that we were portraying.
Margaret ended up marrying Donald Penobscot. Little tidbit, I'm sitting in a studio just about a mile from the Penobscot River here in Maine.
No kidding. I knew it was a real name, yeah. Maine, where?
We're in Bangor. When Jamie was on, Jamie asked if we could see Crabapple Cove from here.
Yes, I guess there's no such thing. But
no.
In any case, there should be. What a charming name, a Crabapple and a cove. Angela Lansbury's location also, this charming little New England-y kind of rural, delicious community that you wish existed, that you could move there and retire there. Okay. So charming. Hawkeye just talked about his hometown, you got such a feeling of that friendly, one-on-one, everybody knows everybody, neighbors love each other. It's, you know, utopian sort of Crabapple Cove, you know.
I want to ask about a couple of people from the cast who are no longer with us. McLean Stevenson, you said before, he told you when he left, he knew he would never be in anything as good as MASH. Did some of you try to convince him to stay around a little bit longer?
I can only speak for myself. I don't think I would expect the producers try to talk him out of it because, you know, he was so valuable. I mean, he really was. He was the guy who took off with the show. I mean, Matt won just out of the gate. He won a Golden Globe. I mean, we were very close friends. Matt, in fact, asked me to receive the award for him, which was great. You know why? You receive an award for somebody else, you can stand there and tell everybody how great they are, you know, because they can't do that. They're going to say thank you if they're there. But you can say, you have really done the right thing here, giving this award to this incredible character, this incredible talent. And it was a pleasure to be able to get up there and tell everybody that he was great and we loved him. So Max was the funniest human being. I mean, he was hilarious. And at the same time could be so touching in some of the scenes. You know, it was such a short 3 years to have him. But, yes, he did say that. He said, I know I'll never be in anything this good again. And I didn't try to talk him out of it, but I did say, but why then, Matt? why do you leave us? And he said, I just want to be number one. And I said, you are. I don't care about the billing. This is your show. I mean, he was taking off. He was replacing Johnny Carson, you know, he was not replacing him, but taking over for Johnny when he was absent from his show. He was doing stand-up comedy. He was very the biggie, you know, and he just felt he wanted to be the one in the show people reacted to. Mm-hmm. Normally, what his his figure was reacting to the craziness. He was the one reacting. Jamie Klinger walks in and he's reacting hilariously to Jamie. And he wanted to be the one, not to play Klinger, but he wanted to be the one that people were reacting to. I don't know if that makes any sense.
Oh, it does. Him, absolutely.
For him, yeah, he wanted to be the number one of the show. And he said, I've got to get out there and try. And that was his goal, and I respected it. But, oh, I was devastated at the news when he told me. But I was not going to try to change his mind about that. He was entitled to go out and go after what he wanted.
Mike has told us about Bill Christopher, his memories of seeing him reading Homer in ancient Greek on the set. What do you remember most about working with Bill?
It's true. Oh, God, I used to kid Bill. I said, you know, I do honestly believe that you have been the cause of bringing people back to the church more than any living clergy. I mean, I said, people adore you. And he was I love the way he played the priest. He was so human. He just, you know, his humanity, his fairness, his humanity, really. He was such a human priest. And I was brought up Catholic. I didn't get to meet many priests like Bill Christopher. They weren't human. They were, most of them, holier than thou, you know, and it was, and of course, I was a kid, so they automatically are up there and you're looking up to them and so forth. But Bill met you square on. You could tell him anything. And that's the kind of priest I think the priest should be that. They should be our connection to a higher power, if you will. And that was Bill. And funny. Oh, my God, that dry sense of humor. We had a contest. You'll remember this because it was hilarious. It was an episode in which Hawkeye comes up with this great idea to see how many people could fit into one Jeep. And we're piling into the Jeep, and he's going to take a picture and send it to, you know, Time Magazine or whatever crazy idea Hawkeye had. And Bill wound up on the bottom. And everybody's going, hey, Bill, are you okay down there, Bill? And he said, fortunately, I remembered to bring something to read. Well, he was always so deliciously funny and unpredictable and dear. And he was one of a kind. Yeah. Our people were so special. They were all so one in a zillion. No, you're not. And what was clever and really wise of the production office was never to try to replace these irreplaceable people. How could you do? You can't do that. You could not replace McLean Stevenson, but what you can do is get a Harry Morgan bringing in his one in a zillion personality, talent, gift. You know, here was the guy who could be funny, but he could also be one of the guys that get drunk with them, be my father figure, or scold me, yell at me, or wait. I mean, he could do it all. And it gave us all a shot in the arm, because here we were positioning to react to a new flavor. This was a new guy. And we couldn't be the same characters as we were with Mac.
I rewatched the other night. I happened to catch the episode where Colonel Potter inherits the bottle of brandy as the last survivor of his unit. And my goodness, it shows what pros you were, knowing how you all felt about Harry. I don't know how you kept a dry eye.
We didn't. But the truth of the matter is, It was more about Harry. When Harry was making those speech, you now remove yourself and contemplate how many people in the industry, greatness that he worked with. You know, when you contemplate some of the films that he did, great black and white classics.
Oh, yeah.
And those incredible people, I mean, you know, Spencer Tracy, Frederick March, you know, I mean, I can go on. He was in
the Oxbow incident.
The Oxbow incident, yeah. Judgment at Nuremberg. You know, you go on and on. And he, when he was making that speech, he had already lost quite a few of his comrades. And his whole heart and soul was bare in that speech, toasting his old comrades. And of course, Harry, when we wrapped, and he was talking to the press, with all he had done, you know, I think 8 or 9 television series, he said it wasn't that it wasn't fun or nice, but you could walk away. He said, but this has been a different experience. Mm-hmm. I love these people. We're family, you know. And that poured into what he felt about us as well, that he invited his new family, his new comrades, to enjoy toasting his old and lost comrades. And it had such great meaning for all of us. But for Harry, he was talking about, you know, his losses.
And I love what he said. Someone asked him if doing MASH made him a better actor. And he said, I don't know if it made me a better actor. It made me a better person.
Yes, he said that. I tell you, he did.
So here we are 50 years later. Why are we still talking about MASH? Why are people still watching it after all these years?
Yeah, which is, again, why you're not really surprised or taken aback by 50 years. I don't think, and I'm probably alone in my theory here, I don't think we should have ended when we did. And I think to say we didn't want to start repeating ourselves doesn't quite cut it for me, because that's what reruns and syndication is all about. People love watching it again and again and again, repeating ourselves. I know people, fans out there, who know our series by heart. Say that they have the series on tape or recordings. And they watch it when it's on the air, and they play their own. I mean, they're inundated with the flavor, the jokes, the pain, the tears, everything. It's not so much as repetition as reliving. And when something is relevant and marvelous, wonderful, as MASH, I think, is, why not repeat it? Why not relive it? Because it's a part of you. So you're not really repeating yourself the way they were saying, we don't want to repeat jokes or whatever. Who cares? Look at the repetition you're looking at with 50 years of syndication. So I always felt that we could have gone on for a few more years. I felt maybe we cheated our fans by a couple of years. And so they in turn are watching us for 50 years. That with they said, okay, you won't do any more. We'll keep watching anyhow. You know, maybe I'm feeding my own heart about it. You know, I don't know. But my contention was always that we left too soon.
Well, as fans, we're so grateful for the episodes that we have it and that they're out there, whether it is on a DVD or an old VHS, or whether you're able to still catch them. I think the show probably airs somewhere in the world every minute of the day.
Yeah, it's like that old joke about having a toast or somewhere the sun is going down over the yardarm or whatever that is. Yeah, I think so. I've traveled extensively because I was a part of a group that did, Shirley Valentine, which is a solo flight, easy to transport. The Theater Guild had me do cruises where I could do my play alone. So I've taken Shirley all over the world. And I was in Egypt, and I was on a cruise, and people in Egypt were recognizing me. Now, that, go, whoa. Wow, I'm in Cairo. I'm in the Cairo Museum, and people are recognizing me. So it's spectacular if you allow yourself to be a part of that, and God knows you can enjoy it. Wow. I don't think it's an invasion of my privacy so much as embracing me into all those families out there, and that MASH is a family. Some of my mail has indicated that they feel a part of our family. That word gets used a lot, and I had one letter that I kept for a long time, where this young woman told me that she had been the product of a divorce, a bad one, where the father just kind of left and left them, period, in the lurch with no income, no nothing. And her mother had to hold two jobs down to keep them together and well. And as a result, she didn't have too much quality time with mom because she was working all day and she was growing up in school, work, and so forth. And so when she was a kid, she grew up with MASH, treating me like her big sister. You became my big sister. Margaret was my big sister. And she helped me grow up. And, you know, I mean, it's a beautiful letter. And she said when she wrote it, she was an adult, married, and guess what? She became a nurse. And that's extraordinary. That to get a piece of mail like that is so meaningful to an actor. This is, you know, a job for me, but it was been a very important piece of work. And there's a very amusing actor's prayer. And one of the things that you pray for is to have successes that are not only successes, but contain enough value to make me proud. And heaven knows, I think MASH has that. It contains so much value, and it allows us as the MASH family to be very proud.
Well, absolutely.
Influence, you know, that I think that I have influenced young women out there to become nurses, which is, you know, heroin. It's beyond thrilling to realize you're a part of such a thing, you know.
Well, we're happy to have you help us celebrate the 50th anniversary of the show. Want to remind folks, too, to go to the website, sweetheart.org. Check out the wonderful new perfume, Sweetheart.
And second, buy the book.
Buy the book. Get the beautiful watercolors.
With those wonderful things that Mike Farrell says about me. No, it's a lovely piece. He's a beautiful writer. He's a beautiful man. My guys, my men, my lovely, lovely men, my lovely family.
Loretta, it's wonderful to talk with you again. By the way, last time we were on, I had mentioned to you that my sister wanted to send along her thanks. She was a first responder during 9/11 and remembers you being there helping out in the days following, and she wanted to send along her best when she heard we were talking again.
Oh, yeah, my best back to her. And yes, I was there. I was there for 2 months. I was at Javits Center, dishing out food and pouring coffee. I was also at Ground Zero. I was there when we were still pulling down buildings, wearing my gas mask, and working alongside of people who are, you have no words to describe their courage and integrity. And, it was an experience of a lifetime, not for only the obvious reasons, the horrific, but to have been working alongside of, people identifying body parts. You know, I have some things in my experience that are really, breathtaking. Mm-hmm. And so I appreciate that she remembers me from that time, and do send back my love.
I will do that. Loretta, it's wonderful to talk with you again. Be well. We'll be talking with Mike in a couple days. We'll say hello, but you guys stay in touch so frequently, and I'm sure you'll see each other out on the road somewhere soon.
Oh no, we talk all the time. Mike very often calls me sis, his little sis. I call him bro. We're close, good friends. He is like my brother, which is very interesting. Wayne, in the same position on the scoreboard, also behaved like my big brother, and he also took care of me in that way. And Max used to call me Ma. Now, I took care of Mac. He said he thought I was one of the most maternal women he'd ever met in his life. But I did have those feelings about our cast, maybe because I was the only female. But if we were family, I probably was mother to some, and I was sister to Mike, Jamie certainly is one of my brothers. Oh my, he's talk about one of a million. And our fans love finding out stuff about Jamie, aka Klinger. You know, so different, such a stretch for him to play from the real Jamie. Thank you for everything, and God bless. Have a beautiful day.